radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partner are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Most people are in the States, but if you're anywhere else, welcome. You're listening to Free Association on Studio B at Revolution Radio. It's 4 p.m. or just after 4 p.m. here in the UK. It's 11 a.m. on the East Coast in the States. And you'll have to work it out from there if you're anywhere else in the world, because I can't think straight at the moment. So I'm not going to even try and work out Australia or anything like that. But welcome. Glad you could join us. And it's been an interesting week. I thought it was a good show last week. I was quite into Baruch Spinoza, so I was quite pleased with last week's show in terms of content. It was very, very simple and very direct, but it covered a lot of ground, I thought. And Spinoza's mode of the world. All right, thanks, Mist. I appreciate the feedback on the audio. That's good. As long as you can hear me, I'm happy. The Baruch Spinoza in the 16th century was doing a remarkable job. Welcome, Lenny. Glad to see you. I know it's early for you, but thanks for coming in. Much appreciated. All right, so the Element chat room is now telling me I can update it, but I'm not going to do that because it'll confuse me completely. And I haven't really got a show as yet. I'm just kind of working it out as I go along. So, Lenny, if you feel like jumping on for a conversation, I'll pull you in. No, I'm not in the pub. I'm in the kitchen. I'm in the kitchen, fleeced. I've got a setup in an audio setup in the kitchen, which is kind of doing me all right. So I've got a Rodecaster Pro 2 sitting here, and I've got another audio interface on the other side of the laptop. And between them, they confuse the hell out of me because I don't know which direction the audio is going to go in next, but it's functional. It means I've got monitor speakers set up. It's a nice little setup in this kitchen. I've got post-it notes all over the kitchen work surfaces, all over the units. All of the cupboard doors have all just loaded with post-it notes from whatever it is I've been doing. So I ought to describe that, really, haven't I? So the The post-it notes I've got up here at the moment are from a couple of weeks ago when I was researching Lucky Luciano and Bugsy Siegel. I thought I'd take a look at Las Vegas and the gangster influence in Las Vegas, the mobster influence in Las Vegas. So that took me a few days, and I wrote notes about casino openings and all sorts of things. Jimmy Durante apparently opened one of the casinos that Bugsy, well, it was Bugsy Siegel's first casino, which I forget the name of, but Jimmy Durante opened it, which I thought was interesting. And I've got June 20th, 1947 written down, and I'm thinking that might be the date that the casino opened? I don't know. I can't remember. All I've got is the date. So if anybody in the chat knows anything about Las Vegas casinos and Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano and Bugsy Siegel, let me know, because I'd like to have a conversation with you about them at some point. Doesn't, not necessarily today, but it's something that I'm interested in. I think if you follow the money from that point onwards, keeping in mind that the Italian mafia was working with the CIA at that point and the FBI to keep the communists out, I think. So I think if you follow the money from the mid-20s onwards, from Prohibition onwards, you can kind of get a lot of answers. And it's pretty much what Whitney Webb's doing, and what there's another woman I've been watching on YouTube as well whose name escapes me for the moment, but she's got a lot of good information. Whitney Webb's really the light version of what's actually going on. She touches on a lot of names and places, but Kirby Summers is the other woman that I'm listening to. Who's been involved? She was involved as a sex slave for one of the main families in New York. So she's looking at it from that point of view. She's a journalist now, researching everything around that particular family. And it connects in with Epstein and with the Franklin pedophile ring, sex trafficking ring. So I think there's a lot of interconnections. I was looking at the Process Church at the same time. That's around about the time that I was doing the research into the... Well, it turned into Son of Sam for a while. All of these things, I posted these things on my podcast, but I don't always get as far as doing radio shows about them. But anything that shows up that's interesting, I post on the podcast, which is just called Free Association Roundtable, is the way to find my podcast, if anybody wants to do that. And you can find it on Spotify and on Google Podcasts and on iTunes and on all major podcast platforms. So all the bits in between Saturdays are on there. And it fills in a lot of gaps. And I'm just following a trail, really. I'm not actually looking for anything in particular. I'm just following a trail to see where it leads. And at the moment, I'm following the money. And if you follow the money from Meyer Lansky through the plot to kill Castro, and then through CIA drug smuggling and gun running and prostitution and all of that sort of stuff, it all links into the same group type of people, the same group of people. So, and that links into the stuff that Kirby Summers was talking about, the people trafficking and sex trafficking material that she's talking. I'm going to play some of her stuff because I'm talking about it, so it's what I'm going to do today. Let me have a look. I was going to play a little bit of Redacted, but I think Kirby Summers is a better place to play. So I'll just look that up. This is what happens when I don't plan. I just kind of work it out as I go along. So, S-O-M-M-E-R-S is Summers. All right, here's a, there's about half an hour of, there's a new one that's just been uploaded 4 hours ago. So I think that's probably the one that I play. This is from Kirby Summers' YouTube channel. And I'll post the link. Let me share my screen and do this properly.
Hi, it's Kirby Summers, and I welcome you to my True Crime Podcast. Today is January 21st, 2023. And I am going to be talking about something many of you have been asking me questions on, and that's going to be Father Flanagan. So for those of you who are not aware of who Father Flanagan is, he is the priest that ran Boys Town. And Boys Town, many of you will already know, is where many of the victims that were used in the Franklin childhood abuse case were gotten from. So I went back and I did my digging through, and I've come up with his history that I'm going to share with you today. But I want to look at for red flags, you know, like Hollywood is a red flag, the military is a red flag. And so I have all sorts of goodies for you today. This is a special episode. Because there's a lot of information I'm going to cover. But first, I'm going to thank you for subscribing, because my goal, as I've been telling you for a couple of weeks, is to get to 10,000 subscribers by February. Today is the 21st. We still have some time. And I know that many of you who listen to my show on a regular basis don't subscribe. So please subscribe. And of course, like the video. Like the video. I hope you guys are well. I am finally, I think, at my 95% of getting better. I haven't been horribly ill since the beginning of December. But hooray, hooray. You know, all bad things have come to an end, and there's always a lot of scary things that await you if you've given up. A bad couple of weeks, something happens. So it's always good to remain optimistic. So I've told you about the red flags a little more. I'm going to go into his history, but before I do that, I want to say that pedophilia within the Catholic Church, and yes, it's extended to other religion and other places of worship, but today I am going to focus on the Catholic Church. We're going to talk about Father Flanagan. The first pedophile pope lived in the 4th century, and that was ancient Damascus. The Catholic Church was afraid that the truth be revealed, and they left him in place. And then there have been at least another very well-known pedophile priest up until like 1400. So, I'm sorry, popes, not priests. Imagine how many priests. I also recently made a connection of a pedophile priest who was very close to John Wall Pope. I will have to do that podcast. It's a separate because it shows how high the information travels, and so with that sort of like preface, you know, that not a new thing, that pedophilia within the Catholic Church has been around since the 4th century, since the beginning. I will let you know that in 1938, MGM decided to create the movie called Boys Town. It starts as Trainee. No, this is crazy. Okay, maybe I'm still a little bit sick, but okay, let's just keep going. That's Trainee. I would like to go along with Andy and Rooney, who portrayed a troubled boy. And at the end of the film, I don't know if any of you have watched it, it's an old film. But at the very end, because they used to play it on TV all the time when I was a kid, there was always a secret address for Boy Town in Omaha, Nebraska. And they always elicited donations from the public. That's a crazy one on TV, an Oscar for his performance. The movie went on to make Mickey Rooney one of the popular actors of all time. So we do know, talking about that flag, that Hollywood is an arm of the CIA. So there's no bigger deception than that movie, Boys Town, about this orphanage in Omaha, Nebraska. So it was founded in 1917 by a Catholic priest named Edward Joseph Flanagan. I'm going to just try to skip over a lot of this information and come back to it in a bit. I have a photograph of him as a young man. He was born in Ireland, but I also found that there's a lot of stuff that happened in Ireland, right? What comes to mind is Jimmy Savile, who traveled to Ireland to abuse boys. But Flanagan himself was born in 1886 in the village of Ballymoe, County Galway, Ireland. His parents were John and Honoria Flanagan. They were farmers, but they were relatively well off. John was a herdsman, and his wife cared for the children. They lived with John's parents, and it was a crowded home with lots of work that kept the children busy. They were devout Catholics, and they attended services regularly. Edward was the eighth child in a family of 11 children. He was born prematurely, and the family was told that he might not survive. His grandfather started to care for the child, hoping to, you know, save the baby's life. And so what he did was he kept him wrapped up in a blanket, lying on his chest next to the hearth in the kitchen for the first few weeks. And he survived. So he grew up to be very frail. He wasn't really assigned the tasks that were considered to be difficult. And so he was pretty much the more doted upon child because he was frail. And he was not really given any hard things to do. When he became older, his parents made the decision for him that he was better suited to become a priest with the Roman Catholic Church. And when he was in school, he attended a school called Clonmonas Primary School. Then he moved on to Summerhill College. It's a school for boys where he graduated in 1904. Now, it's fair to conclude that life had to be somewhat difficult for him. He was a mama's boy. He regularly became ill, and it was an all-boys school. So it's fair to think that he was probably bullied. And, you know, all-boys schools are notorious for all kinds of outrageous behavior. So wanting to know more about his parents' lifestyle and what afforded them the luxury of sending several of their children to the United States, I tracked down a scholarly journal with insights to help me figure out what was happening in Ireland at the time. And so what I came away with was that the herdsmen mentality was that they were conscientious of being employees. They worked hard and they had aspirations of being respectable. I'm going to read you an excerpt that I actually used for one of my articles about my research. and this was written in the early 1820s. Shepherds have usually a house, small garden, some tillage ground, and grass for cow, and generally keeping for a brood mare. As they are servants of some respectability, they have commonly many indulgences, and no person would take a herd without his possessing some stock, as they are frequently the only security from neglect or misdemeanor. And so this is the type of home that Edward Joseph Flanagan was reared in. So far from the single-parent, poverty-stricken homes that one day the boys that would live at Boys Town would be, you know, those boys were boys that had, you know, no parents or had no one to care for them. So Edward Joseph Flanagan came from a family who cared for him and who had the means to care for him. In 1904, he set sail for America with his sister to go live with their older brother, who was also a priest. His name was Patrick Flanagan. And he was a priest at St. Patrick's Church in Omaha, Nebraska. So Edward, who wasn't as shy as he let on, brought along all the 32 countries. He brought along with him, and I'm going to try to explain this. So there are different parts of Ireland, and he knew that there had been a very large migration to the United States from Ireland. And so he went about, before going on this moving to the United States, collecting grass from all the different areas. We can call them towns, districts, you know, there are different areas. He collected grass from each one of them. Apparently there are 32 different districts, or at least there were at the time. And so once he arrived in the United States, he sold this native soil to other Irish immigrants, and he charged each one of them a dollar. Now, back in that time, a dollar was a lot of money. He then had to learn to hone his speaking skills, because priests, while it's not necessarily something that we are cognizant of if you've ever been inside a Catholic church, but what they do is they give a sermon, right? So public speaking is very important, and the ability to not be shy in front of a large group of people is also very important. So he had to learn hone his speaking skills, which is the very first thing that he did. So by 1919, he becomes a citizen of the United States. But before that, he crosses back and forth several times to complete his education. So he went back to Europe. The first stop was Mount St. Mary's University. And then it's sort of like the largest private Roman Catholic seminary. And there he received a Bachelor of Arts in 1906 and a Master of Arts degree in 1908. Now, once again, he became ill. He got pneumonia, and he would regularly get pneumonia and become ill since he was a child. During the time that he was sick, he would find his way back to his siblings so that his sister could take care of him. So basically, to say that he was coddled would be a fair assessment. So once he recovered, he went on his way again to another high-ranking school. And so this time he continued his studies at St. Joseph's Seminary in Dunwoody, New York. And that's basically part of the Archdiocese of New York, and it's located about 16 miles north of the Cathedral of St. Patrick in Midtown Manhattan. And of note, Jeffrey Epstein's Madison Avenue office in New York City is just across the street from St. Patrick's Cathedral, and it's on the land owned by the Archdiocese. I mean, the Archdiocese, frankly, is one of the largest landowners in New York City. The second being, or maybe they're nose to nose at this point. The second being Columbia University. So during this time, Flanagan also traveled to Italy, where he served a term as an adjunct preacher at St. Sylvester's Basilica in Rome. What I did was I pulled up a photograph. Maybe I'll use this for my cover photo. I don't know, but it's a beautiful basilica. In the classical style. It's beautiful. So this might be a good time to include a little history about the Vatican, which is really the world's smallest country. So while it's small in size, its history stretches back centuries, with more sex and financial scandals than anyone can ever list. So the Vatican didn't make it into The Godfather with Marlon Brando for nothing. I think that many of you might remember a well-known book about the Vatican and the banker and their role in the Pizza Connection and their role in several scandals that were exposed by a couple of very good authors. One book was, I believe it was called The Vatican Bank or Banker. I'll have to look for that. Maybe I'll include it in my notes below. So the first pope to have resigned from the throne was Pope Benedict IX, and he resigned in 1036, just 4 years after he sat on it at the tender age of 20. And the reason for this is because he was a sexual deviant with every sort of sinful behavior. He had orgies, and it didn't include just men, but it included animals. It had men, women, and animals. And this is like he's a young man, and he liked rape, and he liked murdering. So this is the kind of stuff that we've heard whispers, right, that happened on Epstein's, let's say, island. Whispers of this kind of behavior. And this is like such a long time ago. This is well over 1,000, just shy. This is almost 1,000 years ago. So that's the way the Catholic Church has sort of hidden all of the scandals. Continues to be astonishing to me. How it survived still with so many men continuing to step forward as adults to talk about their experience is a mystery to me. And the only thing that makes sense is that it, like other institutions that I'll talk about at another time, is that the Catholic Church is also an intelligence gathering place. Where else can you hear the secrets of parishioners if not behind the confessional? So that's another red sign. If there's massive depravity and massive scandals and people are being harmed and actually murdered, the doors of whatever it is would be closed. They remain open because there's a function that is needed. And it's my opinion, based on all of the information I've come across, that the Catholic Church is another arm of the intelligence services. Okay, so let's go back to Flanagan. So he returns to Omaha because his health took a turn for the worse, as it always did, and his long-suffering sister nursed him back to health. So once he recovered, he crossed the Atlantic Ocean again, where he finally completed his studies for the priesthood at the University of Innsbruck in Austria. In 1912, he became finally an ordained priest. And he gave his very first mass at St. Ignatius church with many of his family members present. He then moved back to Nebraska, where he became an assistant to his brother in Omaha. So what happened was there was a day that changed his life and that would signal the beginning of what we know as Boys Town. And that day is March 23rd, 1913. That's when his life was forever changed. And what happened was the deadliest tornado in the history of the state arrived. It was an early Easter Sunday. The day had begun very sunny, very spring-like. And then suddenly there was a very large black mushroom cloud that appeared out of nowhere. And within 35 minutes, the tornado had moved across 40 miles of Nebraska. So this changed his life, because what happened was that the tornado killed 155 people. It destroyed one-third of the city. Hundreds of people were left homeless, and many were immediately out of work. So it's at this point that Flanagan opens his first shelter for men, and he did this by purchasing an old hotel called the Old Burlington Hotel. He recruited a group of homeless men, and he let them come in and live in the hotel under the condition that they clean and repair. So that basically they were homeless, he gave them not a great roof over their head, but it was better than living on the street. And as long as they cleaned and helped to repair the building, they could stay there. So this suited Flanagan, and then he went on to acquire an even larger property where he was able to house 1,000 men. When the United States entered the war, meaning World War I, most of those men that he had given housing to enlisted. And so then he decided, okay, I'm going to offer shelter to boys. If we can all go back in time, I'm sure we would all at that moment interfere and say, no, you don't. But this too went through stages until 1918, when he obtained the deed to Overlook Farm, to which he added 5 new buildings, and then he had it incorporated as a separate town, and he named it Boys Town in 1922. So from 1922, he built it. It's literally a town. It's got its own post office. You can't really leave it. Everything is there. On April 7, 1947, Flanagan, at the age of 61, was called upon by the United States War Department to tour Japan and Korea to investigate the need for aid to war orphans. General Douglas MacArthur met him. And then, 3 months later in July, Flanagan goes to the White House, where he personally sits down with the current president, Harry Truman, and he reports his findings. So that's another red flag, right? So he's 61. The War Department decides to call him to tour Japan and Korea to investigate the need for aid for war orphans. To me, when I first came across this information several years ago, I'm like, okay, there it goes, ding, ding, ding. You don't get to sit with the president, because that's another sort of similar thread. So we know that Boys Town, Lawrence King was able to connect with Ronald Reagan directly. And then now we find out that Father Flanagan had a direct connection to Harry Truman, which means that anything he did was either under the direction of the administration and the intelligence services, because it could not have necessarily come from that level, right? So we begin to see the signs of what I have been saying, in almost all of my podcasts, in almost every one of my books, that these trafficking rings are interconnected and they are all sort of part of the intelligence apparatus. Now, that doesn't take away the fact that we have priests and apparently popes who have been child molesters. But if they were doing that without the support of the group above them, which would be the government, right, or the intelligence agency, and then, you know, with the, I suppose, the agreement of the sitting president, they would not be able to really get away with that. So, okay, he reports his findings to Harry Truman. Truman is satisfied with the information, and he says, you know what, Flanagan, you did a good job. I'm going to send you to Germany. Remember, this is Germany, Nazi Germany. It's right after the war. And so, you know, that's really the point in time when I start to think, not only is this an intelligence operation, but in fact, Flanagan maybe it may have been a spy. And it's worth looking into. So I would encourage you, if you are into research and you want to research, that's an area that has not been explored. Was Father Flanagan a spy? I think, yeah. I think he was carrying on an operation similar to the operation that Jeffrey Epstein carried. He, you know, he was sort of like the provider, as was Jeffrey Epstein, as was Craig Spence, as was Larry King. That's the way that sort of the information is presenting itself to me. Well, something happened to Flanagan when he is still in Germany, and that's that on May 15, 1948, he suffers a fatal heart attack. By this time, we know that the intelligence services are already accustomed to murdering people who know too much. So we will never know if he suffered an actual heart attack or if this was actually an assassination because he had learned perhaps too much. Here's what happened. I'll tell you what happened. Well, let me tell you this first. So his body is flown back to Boys Town, where he's given like two extravagant funerals. President Truman makes a special trip to Boys Town on June 5th, 1948, where he lays a wreath on Father Flanagan's tomb. You could probably do a search for that on any search engine and probably come up with a photograph of President Truman's trip to Boys Town. Again, that was on June 5th, 1948. So what's very... remember how we started the conversation with the film, Boys Town? Well, less than 1 year later, in March of 1949, Charles Manson, then 14 years old, is featured in a full-page article in the Indianapolis News, and he's described as a dead-end boy who lived in an emotional blind alley. And he is, quote, happy today, end quote. And so the 14-year-old Manson is seen shaking the hand of the judge who has just told him he's going to Boys Town. I don't know if any of you have seen the full-page article with a photo of the judge shaking hands with Charles Manson and wishing him luck on his trip to Boys Town. By this point in time, Charles Manson had already been in another juvenile home where he didn't like it because he was being abused there, and they were sending him to Boys Town. Well, when I thought about this article, it seemed to me, and I actually found another one that's similar with a friend of Ghislaine Maxwell's, who I will not name in this episode, but you will find that information in my my books clearly, is that seemed to me like an ad. It seemed to me there's a full-page story about 14-year-old Charles Manson, who nobody knows about yet, going to Boys Town. And it seemed to me that that's as much of an ad for possibly other pedophiles as the movie was. Because it's very unusual to find, you know, if Charles Manson didn't turn out to be who he was and wasn't part of the MK Ultra program, because he is connected to the Epstein situation, and I've written a couple of articles about that, and nobody really talks about that connection. And there's like this strand that connects a lot of these, what appear to be different criminals or different catastrophic events. There's a thread that goes through all of them that comes back, and it's all leading to the same place. So he goes to Boys Town, but he doesn't like it. And he's already sexually abused after being there only 2 weeks. In 1990, one of the victims of the Franklin child abuse scandal said that one of the experiences that he had was that Lawrence King also worked with Craig Spence, was that he had been flown to Area 51. Area 51 is a highly classified United States Air Force facility. It's at the center of a lot of conspiracies surrounding UFOs and alien beings. And he said it was one of the places they used because of the fact that it's no civilians are around. There's no chance of anybody seeing anything that happens there, where they would take children as young as 3 and auction them off. So, you know, there's so much here that I can keep going into. However, what I'll say is that some of the people who were involved in the Franklin child abuse case seem to overlap with some of the people that were involved in the Epstein case. Mainstream hasn't really delved into any of this. I know that I did, and I've written a couple of articles where the overlap is clear, and I mention names. However, I wanted to keep this relevant to Father Flanagan to give you background information on what the red flags were during his lifetime, how Boys Town came to be, what allowed him to sort of like keep this thing going, and how it transitioned into becoming the place from where someone like Lawrence King could just walk in and pull children out. And it seems to me that it was always like that. It seems to me that before Larry King and Craig Spence started their Franklin child abuse ring, it seems to me that, because look, if we look at what Manson said many, many years ago, he was already sexually abused, and he ran away after 2 weeks. And then we know that there are allegations, or there's like suspicion, that Manson was also part of a covert operation, and he's connected to all sorts of other things. So anyway, I'm going to say that I can't wait to hear your comments on this. And I hope you guys are well. Like the video, subscribe. Okay, talk soon. Bye.
All right, so that's Kirby Summers talking about Father Flanagan and some of the connections that could go back into Boys Town. Our research is very thorough. She's very good at making connections because she's involved with the real estate in New York, and she's been involved as a sex slave with one of the main families in New York. So if you're interested in this sort of stuff, which I kind of am in my own way, I like to dig around and find out what connections are where. And when I find somebody who's already doing that, I tend to listen to what they have to say. And she's one of the best places that I've found for this type of research. She's got a lot of links from Epstein into other trafficking rings, and she's found links into the CIA and into money laundering and into the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and there's lots of things involved with Epstein that aren't really being talked about, but money laundering is one of the keys. So money laundering is partly for the CIA. And when Southern Air Transport was linked to Iran-Contra, they changed the name and sold it. And Jeffrey Epstein was involved as part of that deal. So there's a link directly to the CIA via Southern Air Transport, which was a CIA front company running guns and drugs to Iran and South America. So there's a lot of material to research and a lot of connections to make. I'm not claiming I've got all of them in my head, which I definitely haven't. But I know where to look. And Kirby Summers is one of the places that I look. So I posted the link in the chat for the people in the chat room. But she obviously that's from her YouTube channel. It's Kirby, K-I-R-B-Y, and Summers is S-O-M-M-E-R-S. So well worth looking into.
Anyway,
so let's move and get rid of that for the time being and
see where we go from here.
So I talk a little bit about my week.
Because I got
sidetracked. So I've set up this meeting on a Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. It's a weekly meeting for people who are kind of vaccine skeptics or lockdown skeptics or virus skeptics or activists who go to various meetings. So we had a meeting on Wednesday last week. It's the third meeting of this particular group. I'm calling it the Magna Carta Cafe just because I need a name in my head. I always name my projects or my events or whatever. So this one's called the Magna Carta Cafe. And the first event was three people. The second event was five people. The last one we had was six people. So it's developing slowly but surely. It's developing into something that I think is going to be very, very good, because it's a lot of people who know what's going on locally and are involved in activism locally. So when there's an event coming up or a speaker coming up, there are people in that group that will know who they are and where they're going to be. So even if it's somebody who's coming up to speak, it's a private group in somebody's house, they'll know about it. So I'm happy that I've got something in Newcastle City Centre now, because otherwise I would have to go out to one of the local towns around Newcastle, and it's a bit too far to go in the middle of winter when it's dark and I don't drive, so I'm relying on somebody to give me a lift. So it's not very practical for me to get to the bigger meetings. So I have to really become a focal point and set up my own meeting. There's no real choice about it. I have to do that. So it's going to be something that develops. If it turns into something that's more than 10 people, then we'll have to move probably from the venue that we're at the moment, because we're meeting in a in the Weatherspoons bar. And it's all right for a couple of hours on a Wednesday afternoon. It's not very busy. It's a three floors on this bar. We meet on the top floor. So there's usually less people on the top floor than there are on the bottom two. And unfortunately, the coffee machine seems to be permanently out of order. So you have to go downstairs to get your coffee and then bring it back up again. But I can live with that for the time being. But if it keeps growing and we get to 10 people, then I'll start looking for another venue. But for the minute, it's a nice little combination of people. It's very honest, very open, which is the way that I want it to stay. I want people just to be able to say what they think. So it's very much, and even if that's against somebody else, I want it to be a place where you can just say what you think. Because to me, if we're standing up for freedom, we're standing up for freedom of speech.
And other things.
And if we don't use that freedom of speech, then why are we even standing up
for it?
So we have to use it.
We
have to be able to speak freely. So that's kind of the intention that I've set with this group, is that it's everybody's sovereign. Everybody has a normal right to speak freely. So if you think something's going on that you don't like it, say so. If it's in one of the other groups, then say so. Because we all need to know if there's something going on. And the only way you can do that is if it's a group where people
speak freely.
And there are situations and people and places around the local area where it's a part of the freedom movement. It's a part of the anti-vaccine, anti-lockdown movement. But there are issues. There are people dominating, or there are people creating undercurrents of things, or having a go at people privately, or threatening people, or whatever. So we need to know about these things so that we can sort them out or avoid the situation, or know which person to avoid to not get into the situation. So there are reasons why freedom of speech is necessary. That's one of them. So I think we're coming to the end of the show. I hope it's been a good balance of my personal kind of week and some useful material from Kirby Summers, I think. And I'm going to play more of her material on the show, because I'm interested in the networks that kind of Jeffrey Epstein was part of. And I've got some of it in my head, but I don't have all of it in my head by any means.
So
I just go to the places that are good sources
of information, and she's one of them.
So if you want to follow along with my research, then you can find the podcast on most big podcast platforms. Just look for Free Association Roundtable. Or I'm also on BitChute.
I'm on
Rumble. If you look for Free Association Radio Show, you'll find me on Locals. And there's a way you can support what I'm doing there. You can join a community, and there's an option to pay a subscription as well. And obviously, when that particular community builds up a little bit, then I'll start doing
exclusive
content over there.
For
the moment, it's here and Podbean, though. I've got a show to do after this one on Podbean, which I'm calling History Reimagined,
which is
going to be a regular show, hopefully.
Just
looking at different parts of history and how it's not necessarily what you think. Whatever's going on, and history is written by the winners. So it's not always accurate. Sometimes it's distorted. Sometimes it's questionable. Sometimes it's hidden. But there's always something to talk about. There's definitely material there that needs to be explored. So I've got a guest coming on called Chris Wilson, who's going to share some of his research. Doing that on Podbean for the hour after this show. So if you want to get access to that, just head over to podbean.com/free association. Sign up for an account and have a look on the live. So that's pretty much it for me. Guys, next week, thanks for listening.
Everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
The invasion.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And, you know, I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down and...
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories.
What do you believe?
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that...